Hey guys, welcome to Throwback Thursdays, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Some of you know, some of you may not know, I've been doing this for about 11 years, so I have a lot of backlogged episodes. And each Thursday, I'm going to re-release an old episode. It's a nice way to look back at things, maybe learn something you missed or relearn something. So I'm going to pick my favorite episodes, and I'm going to re-air them every Thursday on Throwback Thursdays. So check it out. It's brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Thanks.
This week we got a good friend of mine, Charles Whitman. Charles, how are you today?
Good. How you doing?
I'm good, man. Just, you know, getting through the morning here.
Yeah,
been a little hectic.
This was fun. Got a month before the deer season starts out here, at least.
Yeah.
So
I know.
Got a little time
Can't
to prepare
wait.
And all that. Yeah, it's gonna be fun.
Yeah, Charles and I will be hunting blacktail in California together here in about a month and 10 days, not even
something like
days.
That. Yeah, not too far away. Yeah, a month and 8 days.
Yeah, I'm
looking forward to
man.
That. Hopefully, it's not 105 degrees.
But yeah, it wasn't too bad last year.
No, not too bad. He'll probably be high 80s or something like that, you know. Maybe we can get some fog or something, which would be – I love it when it does that, which we do get it. I don't know if we got it last year, but
we did get it. But the mornings were pretty cool and the evenings were pretty cool. I mean, the middle of the day sucked, but
– yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, well, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
What I do, I own an amusement company. We do rock climbing walls, zip lines, all that fun stuff, do corporate events and all that stuff. And then what I like to do, I like doing that. But one of the things I like to do, I love hunting. I've been hunting for all my life. I grew up in Michigan, you know, everything from rabbits and pheasants. And white-tailed deer, mostly. I've mostly been a big game hunter. I've never really been a waterfowl hunter or anything. It's always been big game. My dad was a very dedicated archer. He started in the 50s, which is cool. And he was, you know, shooting a recurve bow in the 50s. And so I was raised on it. I mean, all the meat we ate, everything was you know, what we hunted or fished. But it was mostly hunting. I mean, my dad was just a dedicated whitetail hunter. That's all he ever wanted to do. And if he couldn't hunt them, then he would talk about it.
Yeah.
So, he was obsessed for sure.
Apple doesn't fall too far from the tree, I guess, huh?
Nope. So, I'm out here in California now. And obviously, totally different kind of hunting, different species, you know. Actually, I actually can hunt a little more out here because we have wild pigs, so I can hunt year-round. So I really don't have, as long as I have the time, which this last like 8 months, I've just been working like crazy, but, I really don't have an off season for hunting. So when people talk about, you know, hunting season's coming up, I'm like, I don't know what that means. You mean deer, you know, because I love hunting everything. My goal and everything that I'm doing is to get meat. I don't care what it is. I normally,
you're
you know,
like me,
I don't
man.
Really care this. Yeah. I mean, that's
there's
number
a,
one goal
a lot
goal
of guys out there are very specific. Like they're, you know, they specialize in one species. Oh, I love to hunt elk, or I love to hunt mule deer or coos deer or whitetail or whatever, you know? And for me, I think it's like, I'm an experience hunter. So like I'm out there for the experience and I just want experience. I want to go everywhere and be, I mean, I would wish I can. I know financially it probably never happened, and getting tags will never happen. But I'd love to get all 29, you know. That's my goal. I just don't know if that I'll make it happen or not. I'll get pretty close. I mean, I've got 10 of them already.
It's tough to do. It's not even just time. It is. It's money. It's luck.
It's
you know, drawing
money.
The tags, all that stuff.
Mostly money. Because if you had money, the tags wouldn't even be an issue because then you just go buy sheep tags or goat tags or whatever, you know, those hard ones or tule elk or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But, playing the points and tag game, not happening for this guy, not at 40 years old anyway. So
I don't either.
I might get a sheep tech time on 70 maybe. But,
right. I put in for preference points. I've been doing that in California. I hunt out of state in the West. I hunt in Idaho, and that's the only out of state place that I've gone out west. And it's just all over the counter, no draw.
Yeah.
Like I just, I don't know. I will put in for some draws. There's some I have in mind. But it just seems, I'm like, man, I don't care. I don't want to deal with the, you know, the draws and all this and everything else. There's good enough spots for over the counter tags.
Yeah.
And it's worked out. It's worked out pretty well for me. I mean, I love Idaho.
Yeah.
It works out in
yeah,
California.
I haven't been there in a while, but Idaho's a good place. I was just having this conversation with Chris Denham. About, you know, taking advantage of over the counter opportunities. And I do put in for draw, but I don't really, my strategy is not for success. It's not for trophy or to, you know, get the best units. It's more for, drawing success or and opportunity to harvest an animal. So when
right.
I look, you know, I look for those things that I could probably draw in 2 or 3 years, you know, not, you know, 10 years type draws,
right.
15, 20, you know, obviously you can't
yeah.
do that with sheep and goats and whatnot, but and moose, but,
you just can't wait that long. Like, I don't want to wait.
No.
I want to hunt every year and I want to know that I have good opportunities every year.
Absolutely.
And that's the way I am. I know that's the way you are, too. I mean, it's, you know, that's the best
yeah.
way, man.
And that's why I have a house full of medium-sized animals. But, you know, at the same time, I don't really care. You know, I'm out there for the experience. I'm having a good time. And, yeah, great. If I shoot a 200-inch mule deer, I'd be, you know, head over heels about it. But it's not something that I aspire to do. And I just, like, enjoy
right.
getting out there and,
and you just might get lucky.
Yeah.
I almost got a
yeah.
200 inch this year, or you know,
yeah.
the end of last year. But you know, that was just happened to be that way. I didn't care what it was. I was looking for a buck, and honestly, it's funny. I was with my buddy the day before, and I saw this was in Idaho, and I saw a spike, and I think it was a spike or maybe a little forky or whatever. And I was like, man,
right.
I don't want to go. Like, I don't want to go home empty handed. I need to bring meat home. That's, you know, that's my thing. And he's
right,
like, it's still kind of early. Don't shoot it.
Don't.
He's like, don't shoot it right now. I'm like, all right, man. I hope so. I hope that's a good idea, you know. And we were just talking about, you know, still hunting, and that's what I was doing. And I saw a deer laying down. I kind of double-taked. I saw a deer laying down, and I looked at it in the binoculars, and it was in some weeds and grass and all that. And I saw that it had antlers. I saw the base of the antlers. And that's all that I looked at, the antlers. And the rest of it, I concentrated on the body. I had no idea what it was. No clue.
Right.
I shot it, and then when I walked up to it, I'm like, what? This is the deer I just shot? And it was a 29-inch 5x4 mule deer.
Five.
My first mule deer hunt. I mean, that's just crazy, you know? So you can get lucky, but that's not what I'm going for. If it happens to be that way, then it's like, wow, that's just icing on the cake. But if that thing was a forky, hey, I would have taken it the same way because I'm eating
yeah.
it. You know, that's my goal.
Yeah, that's what makes you happy, and that's what makes you happy. And not
yep.
not to put anything down on trophy hunters because that's what makes them
no.
happy to do. That's what makes them happy to
oh,
do.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just
yep.
It's too much hate out there anyway, so definitely
oh,
no,
yeah,
no
there is.
From this. Definitely no
nope.
pressure here. But anyway, you just mentioned still hunting, and that's kind of one of the reasons why I want to talk to you. You've kind of coined yourself the shadow trekker, and
yep.
and your style of hunting is something that's kind of almost forgotten in a lot of places. And I know back east when I was younger, I mean, that we hunted like that all the time. You actually still hunt. And for those
mm-hmm.
of you who don't know with still hunting, don't confuse that with stand hunting. Stand hunting is standing in one spot or sitting in a tree stand or in a ground blind, and that's a ambush-style hunting. Still hunting is actually walking through the woods very, very slowly and scanning the area ahead of you, scanning your surroundings, and looking for deer and game, rather, and you know, trying to find them, and then before they see you, and making a move on them. And it's kind of gone, you know, because it's probably one of the oldest techniques out there for hunting is that type of pursuit, and you do that, and you do that very well. Like, I remember last year being out there and, you know, you coming back and showing me deer on your camera and everything else that you encountered. And I was doing a different approach. I was glassing, you know. And,
yeah.
You got any tips for somebody who wants? I mean, I used to hunt like that. I didn't have a lot of success because I'm about as sneaky as a woolly mammoth in a china
yeah.
shop. So it's... you know,
it's so funny you bring that up. Yeah. So first of all, I didn't really realize, I mean, I just don't know. I hunt by myself so much and I'm self-filming and stuff, which makes it harder, of course. But, I didn't really know that still hunting was kind of that people don't really do that much anymore. I guess the reason why I got into it is because, you know, hunting in Michigan for 20 years or whatever, I would mostly sit in a tree stand, but obviously that limits you a little bit. You know, it's also a fantastic way to hunt, of course, but I would find myself wanting to get down, and I'm like, man, I'm seeing deer over here. I need to be able to get around a little bit. So that's what I started doing. And I would use, I mean, obviously generally when I'm hunting, I repeat it to myself in my head, you know, I'm keeping this kind of at the forefront, that every step that you take from the second you leave camp or truck or whatever, the hunting doesn't start when you get to the spot in your head where you think, okay, this is where I'm going to go, and this is where the hunting starts.
Okay.
It's literally in every step that you're taking. So being quiet, looking at, you know, the sticks on the ground, all the obvious things, all those little details, if you really concentrate on that, you can slip through the woods really, really easily. Not fast, but you can slip through the woods, not necessarily easily, but really quiet. And
yeah.
It's funny if you take that time, and again, it's a patience thing. And for me, honestly, I'm actually doing it because I'm not really that patient. I like to keep moving and keep kind of active. And it's just what, to me, it's what I'm drawn towards naturally. Like, that's just what I want to do. And I don't know if that's always – I know it's not always the best decision, but it is what I do the most. Obviously, you learn – the more you explore an area, you know, so the more you're moving, you're going to learn the topography of that land a little bit more. And then the more that you do it, so the more times you go back to the same location, you're going to – figure out, you know, the patterns of the animals, right? You're going to see,
oh, yeah, for sure.
Wow, I keep seeing tracks here. I keep seeing tracks here. So through that, you can obviously, you know, change that up a little bit and maybe stand hunt in a spot. You know what I mean? So
right.
You're just learning so, so much. And in Michigan, what I would do is I had this thing on the front of my bow. I had these attachments that were leaves. Because I would find myself, you know, in a spot, I mean, it's almost impossible to sneak up on a deer if they can see you, you know, if they're looking at you or whatever else. But if you have these leaves in front of your bow, and it's crazy. The first time I did it, I heard something. I was like, man, what the heck is that? And I got down out of my stand, and I was walking through this kind of this grassy area. There's woods on both sides. And I'm moving just super, super, super slow. And every inch that I'm taking, I'm kind of looking at the horizon because I need you need to be able to see the animal or whatever it is that's making the noise before it sees you. And you have to, like, I mean, literally, you're walking, and if this deer was downhill, I'm just looking for the tip of an ear, a tail, something, so I can spot the location of that animal. Once you do that, I mean, that's when all the moment of truth stuff comes on. Like, every second counts, you know what I mean? But what I did is I found the animal, and it was a buck. It was rubbing a tree, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, so I just sat there, trying to figure out what to do. The deer starts moving. He was with some does. They ended up crossing my path 30 yards in front of me. They all looked right up at me, but I had those leaves in front of me, you know.
Right.
And they looked for a second, and they were like, well, probably, you know, that looks kind of weird because I don't remember seeing something, you know, because they live there. I'm sure they know,
right.
You know, when something changes. They looked up at me, but human didn't register to them. And the buck walked right in front of me, and boom, you know. And back east in Michigan, people, they're like, you can't, I'm sure you've heard it, they're like, you can't sneak up on whitetail. You can't, spot and stalk them. You can't still hunt them. I'm like, well, you can. I mean, you just got to do it a little bit differently. And I learned that having a little bit of concealment literally on my bow, so when it got to where you were going to close that distance, when you're really close, you could pull it off. You know what I mean? So I think the reward, if you can pull something off like that, it's the same thing as when you're spot stalking. Once you see the animal, you know, you're sitting there and you're glassing once you see it closing that distance. I mean, when you can... when that pays off, I mean, the reward of that is insane because you're physically and mentally focused on that animal. You know what I mean? So if you can actually make it happen, which most of the time it doesn't, you know, that's hunting. But when it does, man, it's just, it's incredible. So
It's a different feeling.
Oh, yeah. I mean, tips, I would say, here's what I do. So here's the difference. I mean, I don't think the difference between species is that big of a deal to me personally. It's the environment that they live in, right? So in California, like we said, hunting starts next month. That's July.
Yeah.
Ugh. It's so dry. It's so hot. The deer, they come out, you know, for the first couple hours of the day. Sometimes it's not even that. It depends on how pressured it is. The evening is sometimes just not even good at all. You know what I mean? Again, depends on where you hunt and everything. The pressure,
yeah, I didn't see a single like maybe one buck the whole one evening.
Right. Yeah, you didn't see much in the evening. Right. Yep.
Yeah.
So
I was on big bucks every morning. I was all over them.
You were too, man. Every morning.
Every morning.
Yeah, you were up
every morning, but every evening I could not find myself a good buck. I couldn't find a buck here except that very first afternoon. I found that one big buck way up high, but that was it.
Right. So what I do is, and I've learned this from, I probably learned the most about hunting in the last 4 years from hunting wild pigs, because I've done that the most. Because you can do it year-round, right? So
right.
When I find a good area, I will go back in. I don't usually set up cameras. I don't do that type of scouting, and it's probably just because I'm lazy or because I don't want to get my stuff stolen or whatever. Because I had a tree stand stolen out here, and it just kind of ruined it for me. As far as I hate thinking that other, I know there's other hunters there. I know there is, but I like going to places where I don't see anybody. I just like the mental aspect of that, and I hate it if you go in and set up a camera or you do this or whatever else, and then it's stolen. It just makes you feel. It makes the whole area feel violated, and I just don't even want to hunt there.
Right.
And it's just a mental thing to me. I'm just like, I don't do it. Like, I know there's deer here. If I spend enough time, if you're consistent, you're going to get it. So what I do to combat kind of the dry weather and the – because you can't take two steps without it sounding like you're walking on, you know, frosted flakes. I mean, that's just the way it is. I'll use a rake. I'll clear an area out. So once I know – that I'm in a good spot and I want to keep coming back to this spot, I'll spend a whole day. I remember one time I came in with an axe and I had a machete and I probably cleared, oh my gosh, I don't know, hundreds of yards of weeds and stuff. Cause I was like, if I'm going to get to these deer, I can't do it with these surroundings. I need to clear a trail so I'm not stepping on all this stuff. And, that works wonders. I mean, obviously, right? Because you can get in.
I did the same thing last year. I don't know if I told you about it.
Did you? No.
Yeah, you know, the one big ridge that's above the ski jump?
Yeah, yeah.
I kept getting busted every time I tried to use those trees. I mean, the deer would be 400 yards below me, and they would still hear me walking up there. And I was like, I got to do something. So Levi and I cleared a path through there so we could walk across quietly, you know.
Yep.
That's funny. Because those Madrone leaves are just terrible.
It's awful. It's funny the animals that you probably, you know, you'll never see, but they hear you from so far away. And I think a lot of people, they go out hunting and they'll come back, man, I didn't see a thing. A lot of it has to do with you don't realize how loud you're being. And there's, you know, there's certain things humans can hear, but obviously, you know, animals, I mean, their hearing capabilities is just out of this world. But you got to think about it. They're evading mountain lions.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
When do you, you know, we're nowhere close to being as quiet as a mountain lion. So a human trying to sneak up on a deer, we have to do these extra, we have to use our intellect and we have to use our tools. And whatever it is, getting on your hands and knees, using a rake, using a machete, whatever it is that you got to do to get into that area, is what you have to do to be successful, especially if you are public land hunting or like you and I are hunting, it's leased land. So, I mean, it's hunted often.
Right.
If you're going to hunt in areas like that, then you have to do something different than everybody else.
Exactly.
You got to do what, you know, what's going to make you successful. So all those little things, I mean, you know, you sit out there and you're like, man, how do I get to, because there's a lot of areas where I'm like, I know there's bucks here every single day, but I don't know how to get to them. I mean, how do you successfully get to them? You can leave super, super early, but then you're, you know, you're making noise getting into it, and then you have swirling winds with the thermals and the mountains, you know, all the different types of winds. So it's a big puzzle, and it's not as straightforward as just, oh, I'm just going to do this. There's so many different aspects that are always changing, and you have to get involved with, I think, with things that probably a lot of people, they don't, you just have to think outside of the box, you know,
right,
in every way, shape, or form. And nothing is too, I don't think anything is too crazy to think about. I mean, sometimes you got to do some really ridiculous stuff.
Yeah.
to try and get an animal out. And sometimes for me, I mean, I think a couple of weeks ago you texted me something and I was out hunting. I had left at 2:45 in the morning so I could get to a spot by 5:30.
Right.
And that's just sometimes what it takes, but I have confidence, you know, in the area. I know that there's animals there. And it's a puzzle and it's a challenge to try and get into them each and every time.
I love the chess game.
Isn't it? I mean, it's insane.
I love it. And you know, that's kind of what I love about whitetail hunting, because it was, or, you know, it's one of the things I love about whitetail hunting, because there's a lot of planning into it, where like some of the Western game stuff, yeah, you go out, you scout and you find areas, but when you're doing glassing, specifically, it's, when you're glassing and stalking, it's not as much. I mean, yeah, you're going to plan a route of attack, you're going to plan a stalk, and so on and so forth. But you know that chess game comes when you're, you know, you're kind of incorporating, you know, a little bit of ambush hunting type stuff, where you're trying to figure out where they're going to be and get in front of them, and so on and so forth. But yeah, I actually wrote. It's funny, you know, you talk about doing, you know, thinking outside the box and doing pretty much crazy things that people don't think about. I wrote in my my book several years back on the secrets of hunting Western game. One of the things I did, I told a story about there was this burn with tons of blowdown and just a tangled mess. And I went in there with a couple of buddies of mine and I with a chainsaw, and I cut a path.
Mm-hmm.
Basically from the bedding area through, because they used to come into the burn to feed, because that's where all the new growth was and all that stuff, through that, past my tree stand, and back to another bedding area on the other side. So deer and elk and everything else, they're trained to save energy. So, you know, basically, they're, not, I want to say they're lazy, but they're going to take the path of least resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Shit, every damn deer that came out of that, you know, that area, use that path, and they came right by my stand, you know, and that was like, everybody was like, I can't believe you're spending all this time. I mean, it took me 3 days to get
right.
it all cleared out, but it worked, you know. I shot a good,
and
I mean, not a great buck, but I shot a buck off of it. I was excited,
right.
You know?
And you could have spent 3 days, 4 days going into that stand, making all kinds of noise and never getting anything.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's the thing. That's what you did. You gave yourself the best opportunity, you know, to do that. And you didn't ruin the area by taking the day or however long it took by, you know, clearing that area out and using the chainsaw and all that kind of stuff. You know, I think a lot of people think that, oh, you don't want to do that. You're going to scare the deer away and all that. Well, obviously that depends on where you are, but yeah. They're used to, I mean, where we were hunting last year, it's right next to a highway, and they're hearing trucks, they're hearing brakes, they're hearing accidents, they're hearing, you know, stuff all the time. You know what I mean? So it's nothing different to them.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, you did what you had to do, and I think that's the difference a lot of times with people who are consistently successful. You know, I imagine they're doing stuff like that, you know, to pull it off consistently. Because otherwise, it's just tough. It's tough anyways, you know. I can't say it doesn't actually make it easier, but I think it might present more opportunities.
Yeah, of course. You gotta create. You gotta create opportunities. I mean, there's luck. There's a lot of luck involved in hunting.
Yeah.
But you gotta create as much luck as you possibly can too. So
you gotta create your own luck. Yeah. No, absolutely.
Exactly.
It's funny, and there isn't a point where I ever get to where I feel like I know what I'm doing. Every time I go hunting, I'm humbled. sometimes it happens and it's really easy and it's like, wow, that was ridiculous. But, you know, how easy that was, I guess, or how fast it happened and nothing went wrong kind of a thing. But you stack that up to the other 100 times and the other 100 days that you went out where everything possible just went wrong. And, you know, you think you had it all planned out and then it never goes that way. And for me, you know, on Facebook or whatever else, and this is the way most people are, you only really show, for the most part, the good stuff and the fun stuff. And I think what people look at, you know, if they're looking at you or a bunch of other guys and they always just have all this game, well, how many days are you spending out in the field? Do you know, you ever think about that? Like, do you know how many days you hunted last year?
It was like 100 or 90-something. Yeah, it was quite a bit.
Yeah, 90-something days. I mean, that is a lot of time. And I was thinking about in Michigan when I used to hunt, especially when I was in high school and, you know, after that and whatnot, I would go out for, like, the planned dates were like 2 weeks a year. And then I would hunt locally, you know, here and there throughout October or whatever else. But if you add it up, I was probably only hunting, 15, 16, 17, 20 days a year tops, right?
20 days a year is a lot for anybody.
Yeah, it is. And I think that's probably the time that most people hunt is 20 days, probably tops, maybe even 2 weeks. And that's not a lot of time. I mean, think about it if you were to learn a language. And I was just thinking about this. I got a bunch of film and stuff, and I was like, man, how am I going to make this film, you know, whatever? What am I going to base it on? And I used to live I went to Mexico to learn Spanish. I went to school down there and everything, and I don't even know it anymore because I don't speak it anymore. But to learn it, I had to immerse myself. I had to go live there. I had to spend months at a time surrounded by people who don't even speak English. And if you really want to learn the language of hunting, what did you do last year? You were out there 90 days.
Yep.
Think about that. 90 days is, for some people, 9 years of hunting. And you did that in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it's the more you hunt, the more you learn. And there isn't really any type of, I don't think there is, there isn't anything you can just go by, this is the way I'm going to do it, this is the way I'm going to, there isn't like a point that you get to where like, I understand it all.
Right,
because animals are constantly changing.
You probably won't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
I don't think I would.
Is anybody even there? I mean,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it's consistency, and then you'll learn. It's a continual language, an organic language that's constantly teaching you something. But I was just thinking about that, because 1 year, I couldn't do it last year. I hunted a lot last year, but I know the year before, I think I was out like 67, 70 days or something.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. I mean, I got an elk. I filled both of my blacktail tags. I got probably 5 pigs or something, you know. And people are just like, what's going on? How's this guy? And I'm like, well, I was out for 70 days. I mean, if you think about it, it's not really that high of a percentage. I was getting after it, you know? And to me, I always think about, like, man, am I hunting harder or am I hunting smarter? I don't know which one I'm doing, but it's probably harder. It's probably, certainly probably a little bit harder than smarter most times. But that's because I'm still fairly young and I like to just, you know, I like to go like that.
Mm-hmm.
But man, watching you last year, I learned a lot watching you last year with using
your... You learned how not to kill a blacktail?
Dude, no, I mean, see, there's a difference there. See, opportunities, you got a lot of opportunities, and that to me is a success. I mean, the things that happen between in that last, 100 yards, those things are, you can only do so much. It's either going to happen or it's not. And a lot of times those things are just out of your control. You know, you just have to keep trying. But you got opportunities on really good buck in a fairly heavily hunted area. You did that every single day. And to me, I saw that and I was like, man, they're just sitting there and they're sitting there for, you know, a couple hours or whatever, and they're glassing. They're really using their binoculars. And I use my binoculars, of course, but not like that. And and I've seen guys do it and things like that, and, you know, watch on TV and everything. I'm like, man, do I have the patience to do that? But
that comes from
watching you do that. Yeah, exactly. And watching you do that, I'm like, wow, okay, I'm going to start doing that. And I've definitely started to do that and having confidence in the process, you know, because the second you put the binoculars up, you're usually not going to find anything. But taking apart those areas and just having confidence that you know that there's deer in there, you just have to find them. And you got to keep that in your head. You have to tell yourself, they are in there. So it's up to me to find them. It's not, oh, they're not in there, and I'm just, like, looking for nothing. You have to keep telling yourself they're in there. And you got to have confidence in the area and in the process. And that's what I really noticed from watching you. And I was like, I need to concentrate on doing that a little bit more. Even though it takes more time, per se, you know, you're sitting in a spot, which I don't like to do, but you're getting more opportunity. So I've definitely,
it's a trade-off for sure. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I tell you what, it's not like sitting in a tree stand where you're looking at the same 30, 40 yards or whatever. And that becomes a war with your brain and willpower to stay put and not move. You know, glassing is a little different because, you're not walking, but your eyes are doing the walking. So you're not like just staring at one spot. And it's not as boring. It's not as ominous and like, you know, just feel like being like repetitive all the time. Like you sit in one spot, but it definitely takes a little bit more patience, but I think once you get good at glassing, especially if you're using a tripod, your experience, it'll jump from, you know, a 5 to a 10, you know, very, very quickly just by getting a good set of binoculars and putting them on a tripod and learning how to glass properly. Because I know that's it for me. I used to still hunt. So when I first came to Arizona, and it was a double-edged sword for me because I didn't have a whole lot of success with it. But I, like you were saying earlier, you learn the terrain. I learned all my hunting spots because I burned through boot leather. You know, I was just walking slow. I was learning trails and how deer, you know, use the area and so on and so forth. And so it's good to have, I think you got to be able to incorporate all hunting tactics if you want to be successful. I'm going to stop and say that. But I think once you've done what you've been doing, and then you can go to glassing. Oh my God, you're gonna be. I mean, you've already killed four blacktail, and you've only lived there for 3 years, which is, I think, is huge.
Well, I've lived here for long. I lived here for longer. It was just the California hunting code that kind of frustrated me, so I kept going back to Ohio to hunt. So I started hunting in California, blacktail. I started hunting blacktail in California in, I think it was 2012, 2013.
Okay.
And I started with pigs, probably the year before that. Yeah, but I was going back to southern Ohio to hunt up until, I don't know, 2011 or 2012, because I was just confused by California. And I was like, what are all these zones? What? I was just used to just buying a tag.
Yeah.
And you can go hunt, you know?
That's a big slap in the face to a lot of guys that live back east. Yeah, you could go to Walmart, pay $24, and you got a hunting license and a deer tag and a turkey tag, and, you know, you come out west, and you're like, what? I got to put in. What is this draw thing? What is this lottery business? You know, I can't just go hunting. Yeah, it's definitely that. I struggled with that a bit myself too early on. Luckily, my uncle out here, Uncle Joe, you know, he was adamant. He's like, you gotta put in this year. And I'm like, yeah, but I just want to go buy a tag and go, you know. But
it was just frustrating. I lived here. It's crazy. I lived here for 6 or 7 years before I hunted in California.
Okay, so you've been in a lot longer than I thought. I thought you were only there for like 5 or 6 years total. Okay.
Yeah, it was crazy. I shoot myself in the foot because I'm like, man, I could have been putting in for elk points for all those years. For California. Because they started not to, I don't know when they started with the elk point thing, but it wasn't that long ago. And, you know, at this point I would have had quite a few points, but whatever, you know.
Yeah. I did the same thing with
Idaho.
I did the same thing with sheep over here because I didn't want to send a check for $1,600 every time, you know. It's stupid. I could have just paid for a bonus point. I didn't, you know. I mean, I got about 15 or 16 points now, but I probably would either have gone sheep hunting already or had 25 points. I would have been in max pool and, you know, whatever.
But says the guy who got the draw for the Florida Mountains Ibex hunt.
Yeah, but I put in for 10 years.
Yeah, that's still pretty nice, though. That's awesome. And you were successful, which is, that's such a crazy thing. I'd never thought about that kind of a hunt at all. You know, I really didn't know too much about it. And I'd seen a couple guys that had hunted there and, like, making a big deal out of it and everything. I'm like, man, what is this place? You know, what's going on? Because you just don't think of a North American – I don't think of an Ibex, you know what I mean?
It's very alien.
Yeah, you know, I just didn't really think about it. I didn't even actually know it was – I sort of equated it – it was completely out of my own ignorance. I equated it to one of those just exotic animals that you hunt, you know, in
Texas
or whatever else.
Shoot one of their deer type situation. Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know, what is this? And I, you know, I watched a couple of videos and I saw yours and I'm like, holy crap, that's a hunt right there. I mean, it's sort of like, that's in Arizona, right? Is that where that is?
No, it's in New Mexico.
It's in New Mexico, okay. So I was like, man, it's like being able to go on a hunt in, you know, the Middle East, you know, Kazakhstan or whatever those things are, but here.
Yep.
You know, the terrain and everything kind of is similar, you know, and you're hunting the same kind of animal. It's a really, that was a cool hunt, man. Very cool hunt.
Yeah.
You did it with a bow.
Oh, absolutely. I've had the opportunity to go back a couple of times. Actually, I went the year before, and I went in January, you know, and helped other guys out. So I kind of, got that place.
Sort of knew the area a little bit.
Because you can't really get it dialed in. But, yeah, I've learned it quite a bit, and I'm in love with it, man. I love Ibex hunting. So,
yeah.
I'm actually going to try to get out and go to Spain this year and go on a Spanish Ibex hunt. I have a friend of mine that runs a international outfitting business, and I might take him up on an offer here. We'll see. I'm going to treat myself for my 40th birthday.
Right. Nice. That sounds like all kinds of fun. Really
yeah,
cool.
We'll see. We'll see if it comes to fruition, but I don't know.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely no, not a species. I'm not an expert on anything. I'm not an expert on whitetail, anything. I probably know how to hunt wild pigs the best because I've hunted them the most.
Right.
And that's what I equated off of. What have I hunted the most? And that's probably what I know the most about. And I'm talking, you know, public land wild pigs, which is a whole different, which is a whole different story. And I have more fun hunting that. Well, here's what happens. I mean, I've got a couple of videos where I'm blacktail hunting, and I can see blacktail that I'm putting a stalk on, but they're still 300 yards away, which is,
yeah,
you know, a long, long ways when it comes to deer. And while I'm on the stalk, I see pigs that I have a better opportunity on. I completely give up the blacktail and go after the pigs.
Yeah.
And yeah. Because I'm looking for the opportunity, and I want to put, you know, meat in the freezer. And, you know, I want to get – it's very, very hard for me to pass up an opportunity. And that's just the way that I am. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah.
Everybody has different situations. But for me, especially because, you know, hey, the sooner I can get done – I own my own business, but that doesn't mean I can just – I mean, some years are different, but that doesn't mean I can just, you know, go do whatever I want. I've got – the sooner I can get a hunt over – the sooner I can get back to doing all kinds of other stuff that I have to do, that is what
yeah.
pays me. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. I can put stuff off a little bit, but if I can get something done, I can go back and, you know, pay the bills. So
well, I hear you, man.
For me to give something up is a tough decision on that aspect as well. You know, my wife would probably be mad at me too. She'd be like, you did what? You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, why would you pass up an opportunity? So, and that's the other thing, man. It's fun getting my wife into hunting. When we were hunting last year,
yeah.
you and I.
Yeah, she hunted with us, yeah.
She was there for a few days, and she missed a buck. It was her first, that was her first shot. And it was exciting. I mean, obviously, it's too bad she couldn't make it happen. But,
right.
hey, I missed my first, I don't know, probably 5 or 6 shots whenever I started, you know, bow hunting. It's just
if you wouldn't mind sharing this story about your wife, I think that's a cool story. This is something you guys would want to hear if you don't mind sharing about how your wife got into hunting and what and what she was before and so on and so forth.
Oh, right. Yeah. You know, I didn't even think about that. So predating all of this, back to our dating years and everything. So my wife, for as long as I've known her, and for 20 years, she was a vegetarian. Obviously, she knew I was a hunter, and she had no problem with, you know, other people eating meat or anything like that. She just chose to be a vegetarian. And I think it was something to do, honestly, with when she was younger, kind of low-quality meat, to tell you the truth. You know what I mean? And she's just like, mm-hmm. yeah, this is gross, you know, kind of a thing. So she ended up having, this was a few years back, I don't know when, but she had back surgery. She did something, she didn't really do a specific, you know, nothing specific to make the back injury happen, but whatever it was, it happened. She had to get surgery. She was super weak, and the doctor was like, you know, protein, whatever. So she was like, all right, well, I'll start eating wild game. You know, my husband's got all kinds of it. And so she started eating wild game. I think the first thing she ate was a trout that we caught, and she caught it actually, and she ate it. She's like, wow, this is actually pretty good. And then I don't know, whatever, pigs, deer. And I eventually talked her into going out and hunting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, hey, you know, why don't you make this kind of process full circle? And if you're going to eat wild game, so got her a bow. She started practicing, and she wants to, you know, be a hunter. So I think now we've gone out for 2 years. What's that?
Is that vegetarian turn hunter? Love it.
Vegetarian turn hunter, yep. And she only eats, so she eats meat, but she only eats wild game. She still won't eat, you know, a cheeseburger from the restaurant or chicken. You know what I mean? She only eats wild game, be it, you know, fish if we go out, or, you know, whatever, elk, anything. So anyways, last year we are basically, she has her first really, really, really good opportunity. And it was a young buck, a forky. And it was not too far away. I don't know, maybe 35 yards, 30 yards or something. So anyway, she missed. But, you know, she felt really bad and all these kind of things, you know, the way that everybody feels when they miss. I'm like, hey, I missed a deer last year. I still miss all the time. You know, it happens. This is your first time not shooting your bow at a target. I mean, a whole different situation. And it took her kind of, you have to reflect on it and think about it and everything, but it took her, you know, a few days to put it all together. And she's like, you know, I can't even really remember it. And, you know, you know how it is when there's just so many things, the adrenaline, just that moment of truth, those few moments or seconds or sometimes minutes, whatever happens in that space of time is unexplainable, really. You just have to kind of do it to understand it, you know. I couldn't do it any justice. But anyways, yeah, so she is a hunter now. She eats wild game. She's been with me. She has seen me take animals. One of the black tails we got, which was actually literally right above the Pacific Ocean on a bluff, my son and wife were with me. They were right next to me.
That's awesome.
And we got a nice black tail. And that was a cool experience because it was really tough getting the deer out. You know, we quartered the deer up. We had to hike it up, way up on these bluffs and everything. And they were there for all of that. They love it. They love eating the meat. The experience of seeing it from start to end, from the frustrating days of not seeing anything to all the failed stalks to finally getting an opportunity, making the shot count, finding the animal, field dressing it, you know, quartering it, backpacking it out, you know, getting it wrapped, getting it in your freezer, taking it back out and cooking it for friends. They see that whole cycle. And that's what I like to show, like in any of my videos or anything or pictures and stuff, I really, really like to concentrate on that. And it certainly rings true with tons and tons of people and tons of non-hunters, which is what I guess if I was to take pride in anything, it would be that. I've gotten self-proclaimed city slickers from San Francisco into hunting.
And that's awesome.
And they're successful at it, you know. And I love taking people out like that who they understand it. They're like, yeah, I mean, I eat meat, but I want to go get it myself. I want to figure that out. And right. I try, you know, I warn them. I said, listen, you might not get a shot. You might not get a shot for years, just so you know that. You know, it's so much, there's so many things to learn. There's so many things that can go wrong. And back to the mountain lion, I say, hey, these animals you're hunting, they're evading mountain lions. So good luck.
Yep.
You know, don't think you're going to be successful. Because you might not be. You know what I mean? So I just don't want you to get your hopes up and all that. So I like to really concentrate on that and show the full circle. I think personally, I don't hold anything against anybody, any hunters or how they do it, you know, for the most part or anything, but I think as far as anti-hunters or non-hunters, things like that, they get the wrong perception of what hunting is. And not that it's hunters' fault, it's just they're not thinking about it, you know, and it's still, you know, whether it's their responsibility to, whether it's their responsibility or not, that can be up for debate. All I know is when I have showed the full realm, the full circle, it has come off a lot easier. And in fact, it's, you know, changed minds of quite a few people because they're like, wow, I've never seen it like that. I've never seen it portrayed like that.
I think we need more
of
that, especially the people that are in the public eye. I think we need a lot more of that. You know, there's too many, especially with social media and stuff like that, everybody's always putting, like you said early on, you know, in this conversation that you're putting, you know, your trophy picks up or whatever, all the grip and grin photos, and you're showing only that side. But, you know, if you show what goes into it, I think you do get the respect of those people who are non-hunters. Anti-hunters, you're you're probably not gonna change their mind. But
right.
The other 70% of the of you know North America that are you know don't care one way or the other about hunting, you know, they're not against it and they're not hunters. Those are the people that need to see. You need to understand and respect why we do what we do, and respect the whole process of it. And you might convert some. We need to create more hunters, or we're going to lose hunting. You know, mm-hmm. if we don't have any hunter recruitment, we're gonna lose it. And I think it's just important as a whole for us to educate people and to show everything. Me personally, in my TV show, I try to show everything, the good, the bad, the ugly. Sometimes that's probably not the smartest thing, and in hindsight, you know, it might give fuel to, you know, anti-hunting groups when I show, you know, making a bad shot or doing something
right.
wrong. I know the hunters mm-hmm. appreciate it because they understand that, you know, they can connect with me and I'm a real person. I'm not just showing you, you know, the 200-inch buck that I shot off of some guy's ranch and, you know,
yeah.
in Texas or whatever. But at the same time, I'm trying this year. I made a pact with myself. I'm going to try to be an ambassador of hunting in everything I do. So
mm-hmm.
that I can help hunter recruitment, I can help keep the antis, not fuel the antis.
Right.
And I respect that about you, man. I like the way you do things, and I that's why we brought you on to the Outdoor Insiders, because you occupy a niche of the hunting community that's not. It's not well known. It's not out there, and I think you got a lot to offer because you got a very almost romantic connection with hunting, and I think it needs to be out there. I think people need to know about that side of it, and you know. So
that's an interesting. Yeah, I like how you put that, a romantic connection, because it is a passion, you know, and it does. It permeates so many parts of my life, and I think what has the opportunity that I have, I guess, and where I think it's unique, where I can change people here, is that I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and besides, you know, going to get some lunch meat or, you know, a few things, whatever. Realistically, I really have not had to buy meat in 4 years, and I live in the San Francisco Bay Area. Like, that's kind of an oxymoron if someone's like, wait a second, what are you talking about? How do you do that, you know? And
because yeah.
people don't, they're so far removed. Well, mm-hmm. in reality, I mean, man, 2 hours, most of the wild pigs that I get, if there isn't any traffic, hour and 45 minutes north of San Francisco, the city,
right.
you know? And it's like you're out in the middle of nowhere. Same thing with, you know, same thing with blacktail, you know, if you don't have private land or something like that, if you're just going, you know, to hunt public land or whatnot, don't have to go that far, and it's completely possible, let alone,
yeah.
of course, all the fishing. Everybody knows the fishing is awesome, you know, around here and everything, but you can do it, you can pull it off, and I think that's what I like showing people. Of course, if I lived in the middle of Wyoming, it wouldn't be as... it wouldn't be as cool. It'd be better,
yeah.
actually, because I would love to do that. Of course, I would love
yeah,
to
I
live
mean,
there.
Yeah, hunting would
but that's
be a lot
not...
better outside that. Wyoming's the bomb.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to live there, of course, but I don't. You know, I got to make money in here, so I have to make it happen here. And I guess that's maybe what puts me in a unique spot is the challenges that you would think I would have living here when – they're not, you know, it's the same as, I do better here than in Michigan, probably, you know what I mean? Just because in some ways I have more opportunity, and I live here in California. It's funny, you know, how that works out. So, but I like the way you put that. I never really thought about that. It's a romantic, connection with hunting, and it is, it's certainly an intimate experience, you know. It's something that you have to do to be able to understand it. And if you can somehow get that across, if you are making videos or whatnot, if you can somehow get that realism across, then you can, I think you can best connect with people and get them into hunting, because they're like, wow, I want to do that. Like, that looks like, that looks like an adventure. It's not just going out and sitting wherever and just shooting something. And I'm not downplaying that. I'm just saying, if you show more than that, you can show what the real adventure is, you know, or how long did it take to get some meat out? I mean, that's crazy. You know, most people, your freezer's full, you know, cause you went to the store and everything. And of course that's the way it has to be. We have so many people. We have to have stores. We have to do that. We can't all hunt, but
no.
Man, that connection that you get with meat and being able to explain that to people, when you can take wild game and make a really good plate for them that they're like, wow, this is delicious, and they know the full story about how it took you a day and a half to get an elk out or something on your back, and it's like, holy crap, that's, you know, there's something there, you know, to that. There's a connection there to your food, which is, which sustains our life. We need it. We have to. Everybody has to have food. So when you can have that kind of a connection with such an important part of your life, you know, it's just, that's hunting. That's what keeps me going, is that those types of experiences and that type of life-sustaining experiences is, I guess, the best way to
how
I look at it, you know.
Seriously, not to sound all wishy-washy, that's beautifully put. I mean, I don't think people are able to verbalize it, but most hunters feel what you just talked about. And it's just about being able to share that with other people that don't know, that don't experience it, that don't understand it. You know, like you said, if that disconnect, you go to the store, you buy your steak, you bring it home, you consume it, and you move on with your life. There's no connection with it. And don't get me wrong. I as much animals as I take a year and everything, I still, mainly because I love beef, I still buy beef and I still buy chicken. And plus my family will eat game meat, but they don't love it. They don't enjoy it the way I do. But I share it with my family, my wife and my children, my family, my mother, my dad, my uncle, my uncles and so on and so forth, that I end up sharing my meat with them because they really enjoy it and they grew up on it and so on and so forth. So I don't let meat go to waste by any means. So, man, I'm glad I had you on. We had a really good talk. It's good to see. It's refreshing to see, you know, your take on it. I'm impressed the way you still hunt. I'm impressed the way you live your life. I think it's awesome. I'm glad your wife got into it. And you're bringing your son into it. Kudos to you. Just thanks for being on and taking the time. And thanks for being part of the Outdoor Insiders. I like reading your articles and the post that you put up. I think you got good insight and your films are entertaining to me. I could connect with them. So
thank you.
Any concluding thoughts or final words of wisdom?
No, no. For anybody who is listening, just get out and hunt more. And every time you go, you're going to learn. And that's all there is. That's all there is to it. There's nothing I could really say that would be any more beneficial than actual getting out and just getting experience for yourself. But thank you a lot, John. By the way, you're too kind for wanting me to be on here. And this was a good conversation. I don't get to talk to a lot of people like this, you know, personally. Mostly it's through social media and people that I really don't even know and have never met.
Right.
But there isn't a lot of hunters that live around me, so I don't get to, unless I talk to my buddies back, you know, in Michigan and stuff, I don't get to talk about this kind of stuff a lot. So it's a real treat, you know, for me to have conversations like this, for sure. It's fun, always fun to talk about hunting. So I'm looking forward to seeing you next month.
Yep.
And yeah, hopefully we can get it done. Yeah, for sure. Thank you very much.
I got to get this monkey off my back, man.
You'll get it done.
I hope so. I'm not going to put any pressure on myself, but I feel like this year we'll make it happen. If anybody wants to find out about Charles, you go to the outdoorinsiders.com and look up his contributor page. You can find him on there. Is there anywhere else?
Facebook. I have my hunting page on Facebook. It's Shadow Trekker Adventures. So Facebook.com, Shadow Trekker Adventures, and the same thing with Instagram, Shadow Trekker Adventures. And you know, where I've used YouTube the most actually with my solo hunting films is about 99% of it, and that's Shadow Trekker Adventures too. And that one, I'm proud to say I have over 1 million views now, which is crazy to think about.
That's
that.
Awesome.
That many people watch my crap, but it's cool.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah,
and
thanks.
Things,
thanks for the plug.
Your YouTube, your Facebook, your Instagram, they're all connected to your Outdoor Insiders page, aren't they?
Yeah, they're all on there. Yep.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, good deal. All right, man. Well, I'll see you in a month, and thanks for taking time.
Awesome. Thanks, John. I'll see you.